This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Blame it on Indiana Jones and King Tut. When we think archaeology, we think relics of the distant past. You know, guys in fedoras or pith helmets traveling to far-off lands, unearthing objects from millennia of dirt and sand. In reality, archaeology is often more recent and much closer to home. It goes wherever the mystery is. So here's a case in point. In the 1820s, the first band of Irish laborers walked north from Boston to Lowell. There, they widened the canal system that powered the mills, and by the mid-19th century, they helped transform Lowell into the nation's largest industrial city. But other than their work, we know almost nothing about these pioneers or the lives they lived. This week, archaeologists have been digging for clues in the Acre, the tiny, dense neighborhood north of downtown Lowell where the Irish first settled. Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea went to see what they've dug up.
Which bell was that?
It was Patrick. He's the largest bell. There are 13 bells up in the tower. In Catholic tradition, bells sing to God, so each one is baptized, and each bell has a name carved in on it.
That's lovely.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful tradition.
The bells don't ring on the hour at St. Patrick's Church, where this excavation is happening. But I asked church archivist David McKean to give him a tug, just to give you a sense of this place. This neighborhood, the Acre, continues to be stop number one on the immigrant parade that's been marching through Lowell for almost two centuries. The Irish, the Greeks, French Canadians, Puerto Ricans, Vietnamese, and Cambodians, each wave has deposited churches, homes, and shops on top of each other in this tightly set place. You can see the strata of history and culture at every turn. It reminds me of Istanbul. And while the Acre's past may not be nearly as distant, it's no less mysterious, as McKean describes it.
I attended St. Pat's. My family is third, fourth generation in the Acre. And growing up here, you always heard the stories of the Irish laborers settling in the paddy camps. And whenever you said, well, where are they? Who were they? What were they doing? You never got a straight answer. Because nobody knew. They were working class people. They did not write down their stories. They were too busy. They're working and then dying.
Here's who did have time to write stuff down. The Yankee mill owners, who set the Acre aside for their Irish laborers in the 1820s. According to their records, this area was a dense shanty town, but just about every inch of the place has since been covered up by successive development. Every inch except for the green in front of St. Pat's.
This building that you see in front of you here is the 1854 church.
Okay.
We know that from the time it was opened, this was lawn. So what was here before that, that's what they're digging to find out.
When you were a kid and you were digging around in here, you ever find anything?
No. No, we weren't allowed to dig. We weren't allowed to even walk in the churchyard. Are you kidding?
Well, they're allowed to dig now. Two squares of earth have been opened up in the lawn, each just about wide and deep enough that you could lie down in it.
We've just cleared away some of the topsoil.
Archaeologist Ronan McHugh.
Here we have what looks like a corroded metal object. It may just be the base of a pot or something, but of course we haven't lifted it yet, so we're not certain.
It looks like it would just crumble like an old piece of paper if you touched it right now.
Certainly, something like this has got to be lifted with great care. Clearly, it will fragment. It's been in the soil for quite some time, and its condition isn't great.
McHugh is with a team of archaeologists from Queen's University in Belfast, which is here working the excavation with students from UMass Lowell. The two institutions inked a wide-reaching collaboration agreement last year.
So as you can see here, most of the hard work has been done by the local students on behalf of the Queen's University staff here. But we're certainly very impressed with their efforts so far.
We have seven different layers here. If you look right over here, it's like a lighter grayish-brown color.
Uh-huh.
And then it moves and it becomes a little gritty. And then there's
water. Eunice DeLeese from Methuen just finished up a bachelor's in poli-sci at UMass Lowell. She got on the dig by writing an essay arguing the project would strengthen ties between the university and the surrounding community.
How far did you have to go down before you found recognizable human artifacts?
Not far, actually. After taking off the grass layer, within the first layer, we started to find some things, found rosary beads, marbles.
Clay pipes, pottery. I mean, we've got a really good array of artifacts which will help to really build up the picture of life here in the Acre during the 19th century.
Colm Donnelly is the project director from Queen's University. Based on these modest discoveries, Donnelly now knows that while his great-great-grandparents suffered potato blight in Ireland, their cousins who'd fled for America were feasting on
oysters. So that's evidence of what they were eating?
Yeah, we've got oysters and we've got also animal bones. And we can see that the animal bone has been butchered. You can see here there's a cut along the side of this animal bone.
According to those Yankee records, as many as 400 Irish lived in the acre by the 1830s.
Do we think that their neighbors would have characterized their living conditions as squalor?
Well, the living conditions would have been squalor, as I say, whenever the camp was first set up and its tents, and these guys are just hardened laborers who've come down, but they start bringing their families with them, and then, you know, they start building the houses. They have a school. The next thing, they have the church. So you've got people who are trying to better themselves. You know, over a period of a decade, it comes from being really a pioneering shanty town to being the makings of an urban environment.
And it's an urban story that continues today as residents from the neighboring housing projects, also built to house the Irish, peek over to see what's what.
That's something, huh?
I mean, they finding anything today?
Bits of pots and a couple of oyster shells.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they used to eat oysters.
The real findings will come in the months ahead, as artifacts are analyzed in labs all over the world. This dig wraps up at the end of the day today, but it's just part of a series of excavations that Queen's University and UMass Lowell are undertaking this summer on both sides of the Atlantic.
We'll be looking at the Irish in 19th century Ireland, and then we'll be looking at the Irish in 19th century United States to see what happened whenever they came across here, looking at this aspect of our shared past.
Reuniting the diaspora?
Absolutely.
It's kind of lovely when you think about it.
It is. It's a nice idea.
That report from Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea. Adam's with me now. Did you take any pictures when you were up in Lowell?
Sure, including one of a remarkably intact clay pipe that they found a couple of days ago. That's all at wbur.org/Boston.
So cool. And that's also the place where our listeners can leave a comment anytime on any of the stories we do. So let's go over some of the feedback we got from this week of shows.
Absolutely. So on Wednesday, we talked to this guy.
Next stop, Radio Boston.
I cannot tell you how much I love that. I could hear that again and again. Can we play it again? Oh, I guess not. Okay, anyway.
Oh, well.
Radio Boston.
Right there. That's our wonderful staff indulging me there. But anyway, that is Frank Oglesby Jr., who voices announcements for the MBTA. And he took on his detractors, who say that his voice on the train sounds too Midwestern or even Canadian, but definitely not Bostonian.
They want the announcements to reflect the Boston flavor, the Boston accent. And I work hard not to slip into that, because not enunciating your R's is lazy. Sorry.
Okay, that did not go over well with Una, who wrote this on our website. Listening to this pompous, arrogant man just gives me one more reason to stay off the subway. How dare he decide how we are to correctly pronounce the names of the places we live and call us lazy for speaking the way we do.
Ouch. But not all of our listeners actually felt that way.
Nope, John had this to say. He said, I don't ride the T to be entertained by drivers with local color. His announcements are clear and concise. And then Stella shot us this sweet note. She said, great piece. Thanks for giving a voice to a voice often heard but unknown.
Well, okay. So earlier this week, we were thinking about the Markov suicide, and we talked to a psychology researcher at Harvard who says he's developed a simple test for determining if an inmate, or actually even anybody else, is suicidal.
Right. So it's a computer program that flashes words on a screen. And according to this guy, Matthew Nock at Harvard, test subjects who linger over words like suicide or death or funeral are much more likely to exhibit suicidal behavior. So the idea here being that just a really simple test like that could be useful in the context of a jail where you have to decide very quickly whether to put an inmate on suicide watch. One of our listeners was skeptical that that kind of thing could work, and he called into our listener voicemail.
Hi, this is Simon calling from Boston. I'm just a little hesitant to believe that someone taking this test more than once wouldn't be able to figure out what was going on, because it seems like if you were about to be released from a mental institution and you took a test and you clicked my funeral too many times and they didn't let you out, you'd probably figure it out.
Well, listeners, if you'd like to leave us a message for broadcast, you can do so anytime by calling 617-353-1137. And you can also find that number online. So Moving on, yesterday we did our occasional segment with the Globe's Love Letters columnist, Meredith Goldstein. Meredith had received a letter from a young black woman who complained that white men in Boston seem very disinterested in dating her.
Right, so we ran this by Laura Worrell, who writes the relationship blog Tart and Soul. And she said this is something that she hears about a lot from other black women.
There's a lot of intimidation, but I think that there's also the idea that black women don't actually want to be approached by men outside of their race. Whether or not that's true is obviously, you know, an individual choice.
And here's what Alan writes on our website. I'd have liked to hear much more from Laura Worrell, who seemed to have some real and important insights into this topic. But there simply wasn't enough time on the show. Why was that? Were you afraid the discussion would provoke strong feelings in the listeners, perhaps? Is this, in fact, a symptom of the difficulty of this issue and hence why black women don't feel valued in the dating scene?
Well, Alan, first and foremost, no fear on Radio Boston. I repeat, no fear. We actually do agree with you because I thought and all of us thought Laura was a great guest and we look forward to having her on again in the future. The issue, though, is that timing is always a bit of a moving target when you do a live show. And moreover, we think that the interest in this segment reveals that there's still a lot to talk about regarding race relations in Boston. That's a much bigger issue. So we're going to look for ways to engage that issue in a variety of ways moving forward.
And one more topic that we want to get into to today. We talked this week to Richard Davey, who is the 37-year-old general manager of the MBTA. That still blows me away. He just came on the job in March. Our listeners really seemed to be impressed by him. A gentleman or lady who goes by Yuppie Scum gave us this comment online. Quote, I haven't been riding the T as much as I used to due to a job change, but I'm extremely impressed with Davey's leadership to date. It seems like he was actually, gasp, competent, something that I don't think we can say about anyone else who's ever run the T. If he keeps this up, he could be governor someday. But I'm hoping he spends at least the next 10 years whipping the tea into the system it should be.
It might take at least that long. But Adam Ragusea, thank you so much for bringing in some of our listeners' feedback.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, if you've got anything to say, rants, raves, compliments, criticisms, anything, you can always post a comment on our website, wbur.org/Boston. You can tag us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at Radio Boston. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. Our program is produced by Adam Ragusea, Jessica Alpert, Dan Mozzie, and Ted Seifer. Our intern is Hugh Roberts. Tim Skog is our technical director. The senior producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a fantastic weekend. Listen to our backlog of stories online at wbur.org/Boston and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.